So thank you for completing that part of my life. That's exactly right. Yesterday's science fiction is tomorrow's science. Well, our last speaker of the day is going to talk about nanotechnology and the environment. It's Adam Orbach. He's a political strategist working to build values-based political majority in America. Adam began his political career in the second grade, not unlike myself, when he convinced his classmates to sign a petition to oust the current Secretary of the Interior. He was elected president of the Sierra Club at the age of 23. After doing that for several terms, he founded Act Now Productions with the goal of reaching all Americans with stories about the fate of the planet. Since that time, Act Now has reached over 100 million people with its programming, including the series The Thin Green Line. The video project today that he's been working on reaches over a million students a year in their classrooms. Act Now has also set up a Skunkworks for new communications initiatives. The company has worked with artists ranging from the Beastie Boys to Pearl Jam to pioneer new fundraising and outreach tools and help produce the best-selling benefit single of the decade. Adam has appeared on television shows ranging from The O'Reilly Report to Charlie Rose to Politically Incorrect. If there's anything outside of that spectrum, I would be curious to know what it is. He's a contributing editor at In These Times magazine, and his recent cover story, Liquidation of the Commons, was named the fifth most underreported story for 2005 by Project Censored. Adam, are you, or you're not, where's Adam? Please come join us. I knew there was someone behind me.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome to San Francisco. For those of you who aren't from here or this area, Bay Area, I hope you enjoy the water. I'm a public utilities commissioner in the city of San Francisco, so the water you're drinking in your rooms, not here, is some of the finest water ever or anywhere, so I hope you enjoy it. How to embrace an aspirational technology. I come to you today as a heretic of sorts. Because my job as someone who has traditionally been defined as an environmentalist is to say, stop! Halt! Everything you're doing is wrong, go slow. Instead, I want to say, speed up. Because right now, we need nanotech. The problems facing the world are far bigger and far greater than any of the political tools that I've spent, the last two decades trying to master. And we need nanotech, and you all in this room, to succeed. I want to talk briefly about how to dream about technology. I want to talk about a case study in social permission. I want to look about how technology moves values, and then talk about where we go from here. I'm going to try to move quickly this way, so we have some time to talk. So yes, caution is wise. I'm honored to speak after Randy Hayes. I know someone who's a pretty senior up at Walmart, and he called me last week and he said, I had to go to a family wedding, and it was the most uncomfortable thing you could ever imagine, because people attacked me the entire time for working at Walmart. Now, right now, nanotech is not understood by most Americans. When it's introduced, it will either be introduced, they'll either hear about it from someone like Randy Hayes, who will engage civil society in stopping it and stopping the development of science, or it will heed the lessons of people like Randy Hayes and be understood as a great possibility for human development. One of the companies we help at Act Now Productions is Allianz, the German insurance company, and this is their report on things that needed to be done to develop nanotech cautiously. These are all familiar to you, I would imagine, and I probably would assume that most of you would see these as good things to do. But I'm not going to focus on that right now. So let's dream of technology. But first, let me tell you why, when I say I am dubious about the effect of politics right now, what I mean. The vision of politics right now is sort of a dog-eat-dog world. If I tell you that Karl Rove knew Bob Novak, and Karl Rove told him that Valerie Plame was a CIA agent, then one day, very soon, we will see Karl Rove dragged off in leg irons, frog-marched out of the White House, and that will move the political zone. Unfortunately, with politics as they are today, that's not going to do very much, because the challenges facing the planet right now, global poverty, climate change in particular, aren't going to be solved by one nation's political changes. So there's this Orson Welles quote, which I love for him as a showman, but don't give them what you think they want. Give them what they never thought was possible. And my experience reading over many of the things that Scott and Christine and a number of people have sent me about nanotech is that you guys have no shortage of dreams. My God, it's insane. It's like, I don't know what you take before you go to sleep. But it's interesting. There are no shortage of dreams. Our 30-year goal is to have such exquisite control over the genetics of living systems that instead of growing a tree, cutting it down, and building a table out of it, we will ultimately be able to grow the table. Fascinating dream. But to what end? What type of world do you want to live in? What are the core values that drive your work? What do you want to be remembered for? These are the precursors to the social permission of which Randy spoke. There's no ethicist we can hire to tell us the answers to these questions. For the research you're doing or for your company, this is something that the company needs to decide. This is something that the institution needs to decide. What are your vision and values, and where are you driving to? What is that North Star? Is that North Star the next quarter's profits, or is it something longer? Is the company that you're starting going to promote human dignity? Will it change the world for the better? Is that what you're going to be remembered by on your deathbed? The company will perhaps last many, many generations. What will it promote? These are the questions. I want to give a case study in social permission, and a question came up earlier, you know, what type of social permission do you need? Why is it important? Well, I'll suggest to you that all major changes in society require social permission. It's just a question of when it's going to happen. Will it happen early? Will it happen late? And the earlier it happens, the better off you are. And almost in a show of good faith, I want to talk about some of the failures of environmentalism as one method of social permission that will, I think, quite obviously, is sort of stacked up to have a battle with nanotech right now. Now, the birth of environmentalism in the springtime is largely attributed to this woman, Rachel Carson, who, as Randy Hayes mentioned, was the first person to call on DDT as killing birds and making eggshells too weak to birth the chicks. The extraordinary response to modernity that she called on had an enormous response. In 1970, the first Earth Day kicked off extraordinary changes in law and governance. Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, Endangered Species Act. The EPA was set up, the National Environmental Policy Act. I mean, in 1969, the Cuyahoga River lit on fire and burned. Burned. I mean, a biblical event. And it's almost in a blink of an eye, the country and the world woke up and said, yes, we are despoiling our environment, we must do something. It was one of the greatest coming togethers of civil society, and it's had enormous effects on our lives, that water that we drink today. Yet something happened. Today, environment never ranks in the top 10 of voter concerns. There's been no major victories, at least at the scale of the ones that I mentioned before in the last 20 years, and the threat of environmental devastation is greater than ever. What happened? Well, policy became the focus. It's focus on technical policy results rather than the broad visions. Activism became so much related to complaints. Issues became the focus as opposed to organizing people based on their values. And probably most importantly, society changed. And I say importantly because it's not just for the environmental movement or for liberal movements, but in many ways, we're all in the same bed. It's a cautionary tale for us because what has moved against environmentalism and liberal social movements is illiberalism, fundamentalism. And fundamentalism doesn't just move against democratic, social, civil movements. It moves largely against science and the development of science. Now, how do we understand that, and how do we see it? Social values and technology. This is a great quote from Michael Adams, who's a researcher from the Canadian research firm Environix, and he said, in the 1970s, Americans saw the modern world and decided they didn't like it. And the next facts you'll see, I think you'll see, sort of fit within this context. This is a question that Adams and others posed in a very broad survey in-home in the U.S. and Canada. 2,500 respondents, three-hour in-home questionnaires. So in 1992, 26% of Canadians agreed that the father of the family must be the master in his own house. In the U.S., 42%. 96, 20, 44% of Americans. 2000, 18% of Canadians. 49% of Americans. 2000, 21% of Canadians. 52% of Americans. This is our society, and this is the society you're working in. So what are social values? And I saw some technology problems here, but social values are a person's fundamental worldview, and it sets the context in which they react to situations, events, opportunities, and challenges. This is the baseline they have, and the way they look at a question like, should I support this new thing called nanotechnology, or should I agree that this thing should be stopped at all costs? This particular research space looks at 114 social values and sees where they've gone over the last few years. And they're everything from ecological concern, effort towards health, enthusiasm for technology is one that's tested, meaningful moments, obedience to authority, ostentatious consumption. And then it goes and maps the American public against a two-axis graph, from survival on the left side to fulfillment, and from authority to individuality. And what you find when you look at and you map these values onto this is that American society breaks into basically four different quadrants. What we call the Bono quadrant in the lower right, which are people who are oriented towards individuality and fulfillment. And fulfillment as opposed to survival. Survival is I can't find my next meal. I do not have a place to sleep tonight. Fulfillment is I want to go mountain biking. Which bike should I drive? Authority means the father is the master in the house. Individuality says, you can be what you want, I can be what I want, we're all okay. Europe right now is basically right smack in the middle of the Bono quadrant. If we look at the US and Canada, where people are, the U.S. is heading towards this quadrant of exclusion and intensity. People more oriented towards survival and more oriented towards individuality. And Canada is becoming more like Europe. Basically, developed countries, as they've been mapped, post-material countries, have moved more towards this Bono quarter. The U.S. right now is moving towards what is what we call the M&M quadrant. People who are very interested in survival, in protecting themselves. And what we're seeing out of that is facts like this. Pollution is necessary to preserve jobs. Men are naturally superior to women. To relieve tension, a little violence is okay. It's important that people admire things I own. I raise these facts because these are challenges not just for liberal social movements, but these are the facts of where America is heading today. And it won't be dealt with either on a technological basis or a political basis alone. It will be dealt with on a cultural basis, of which we are all playing a major role. Some theories on why a diminishment of the American dream, the sort of belief that my parents reached as far as they could and I'm never going to go any further, a growth in American fundamentalism, which we've seen happen, middle-class economic malaise, and the researchers point out a response to technology, a feeling of overwhelmed by new things. It's just enough. I just want to stop. It's just too many things in my life. They've been tracking this value called time stress, and they blame it on technology largely. Email can get me anywhere now. My cell phone rings at any point. I don't have time anymore, and it's technology's fault. So where do we go from here? What I've tried to suggest in the model of looking at social values and technology is to say that society is moving in a particular way, and there are implications for the development of nanotech, both from that area of motion and that as nanotech grows, will affect those as well. And they need to be reviewed, and you need to take them seriously. So where do we go? The first thing is, you know, don't blow it. We're at this amazing moment right now. And no one's going to tell you how to do this, of course. This is something that entrepreneurs, researchers, individuals have to figure out. But the world needs us to succeed. It needs you to succeed in this. This is an incredible opportunity, perhaps the best opportunity that I've seen in recent memory, to reduce human suffering. But what brings with that, though, is an enormous responsibility. Enormous. It's an inspiring chance to expand the possible. And it's a critical moment to encourage social regulation and debate. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here to help push that. Number two, forget Buck Rogers. God, I have to say, reading over just tons of materials, it's a little scary. You guys are kind of scary. I hate to say it. I see nanotech as organic manufacture. It's not how to use machines better. It's how to grow things like nature grows things, small, from the bottom up. And to my mind, it's just honestly sort of field testing that with colleagues in the environmental field and others. It's much nicer than some of the Matrix graphics that I've seen. Growing rather than building, and solutions rather than technologies. The technologies are really cool, and I know that we're all wrapped up into figuring out how to get to the next ones, but the simple solution, rather than growing the table, will mean a lot more. I was fascinated by the gecko analogy, which, of course, you probably are familiar with, but it's beautiful. Increased investment. I mean, it's clear that the federal government is under-investing in nanotech, and I think we should expect a tenfold increase in it. And I think that's something that civil society should be involved with pushing. I, along with a bunch of others, were involved in the Apollo Project, which is a plan to invest $300 billion in clean energy technology. Now, this was something that we were able to get all the major labor unions, all the major environmental groups, and all the major civil rights groups behind together as a way of saying, hey, let's look at shared investment to move us into a clean energy future. Well, likewise, the $3.6 billion investment in nanotech should just be a drop in the bucket. And we know for the United States' competitiveness, for jobs in the United States, as well as to solve these social problems, we're going to need a lot more investment at this time. But with that, of course, comes social responsibility, and that is the challenge to actually self-define. I'm excited. I haven't actually had a chance to review the new guidelines. I'm excited to see what Foresight has come up with. I also just want to say it's my responsibility that I believe the market is far underestimating climate change for the value of the market that it will create. I think we're just barely understanding what the ramifications are for everything. So as much research can be focused in there, the better it gets. So I want to end up with a great quote by Arnold Toynbee. The 20th century will be chiefly remembered by future generations, not as an era of political conflicts or technical innovations, but as an age in which human society dared to think of the welfare of the whole human race as a practical objective. And I thought no better than to change that to nanotechnology, that if we can see this as a means of thinking of the human race and the welfare of that race, that would be quite fabulous. Thank you. Questions?
I just wanted to thank you. It's so refreshing to hear a positively exuberant, optimistic and environmentalist. I just think that that's really great, and wish you all the luck in the world of influencing as many people as you possibly can. Thank
you. Your analysis, but in comparison between the trend of Europe and the U.S. Culturally, what do you attribute to the difference in direction?
World War II. I mean, and World War I. I mean, after decades of war and war and war, Europeans understood that conflict was not perhaps the most effective way of moving forward, that cooperation was a much different vision. And really, you look at the EU and the U.S. as the markers. But yeah, what the EU is developing is extraordinary. And I, you know, to my sense, and I always sort of say this to my European friends, is that they tend to spend time bragging about the EU rather than trying to export its lessons. And I think there's some great lessons that we could use in the U.S. in terms of international cooperation that would be greatly helpful for a number of things we do. But yeah, the death on the continent of those wars, I think, was the thing that really shocked people into a different way of thinking.
Well, almost everything you said sounded really great and inspiring. Right at the end, you called for emphasizing one kind of nanotech over another. You didn't like the machine paradigm. You wanted the biological. I just want to point out that biology uses little tiny molecular machines. The only difference is that they were evolved and they're less powerful. If we use machines that we design, then we'll have more choice about how to use them and what to use them for. And that gives us more responsibility, more chances to make things right, and more chances to make things wrong. But I don't think that designed machines are inherently worse than evolved machines.
Well, I think I fundamentally agree with you. It's actually a conversation I'd love to have in depth with some people. What we do at ACNOW Productions is help kind of long-view companies think through some of these things. What's interesting on the political side is that people have done a lot of deep thought about how you frame conversations that way. I'm not sure if they're necessarily machines in a sort of an essentialist way, or that's just the way that we're describing them. And if you're choosing to describe that way, because, I mean, Randy, I was trying to remember, David Brower used to give a great speech about trees and how trees were machines too and provided great services to the planet, taking, you know, pollution out of the air, fixing the soil, et cetera. And you know, obviously, a tree as a machine is a model too. But is it a machine, or is this the way we're describing it? If we choose to describe it as a machine, I think it's a pretty poor choice.
Yeah. A quick question: how much of the cultural trends that you're talking about in the United States do you feel have been deliberately promoted by certain elements in the U.S. ruling class? I mean, after all, you know, autonomous consumers who are focused on individual survival rather than social good certainly benefits certain elements.
Yeah, I mean, I'm somewhat of a religious historian, and you can look at how, in some ways, the ruling elite has promoted the Catholic Church to make people scared, so that as a way of consolidating their power. Religion has been used for a long... Religion and superstition and an anti-science and anti-development view has been used for generations in order to consolidate power. So I think that's probably a pretty accurate read, sad though it may be.
You explained very well why the Europeans differ from the U.S. How do you explain the difference between U.S. and Canada?
There's Michael Adams. I refer you to his work. He has a great book called Fire and Ice. You know, we're the fire, they're the ice. And then he has another one called Sex in the Snow, which I think is sort of saying that you're not pussies. You're just sexy and cold. I don't know. yes. Well, but here's an interesting fact. So in the United States, until the last few months, I think, SUVs have outsold minivans 2-1. Uh-huh. In Canada, minivans outsell SUVs 2-1.
Those of you who didn't buy SUVs will be shocked to discover that you could have, until the year before last, you could have gotten up to $120,000 tax deduction from the federal government for buying your SUV. That's why Americans bought SUVs.
Adam, I was intrigued by having someone who's labeled an environmentalist stand up and we should increase the NNI by a factor of 10. I think almost everyone in this room would consider that a really good thing. So how could you help us do that?
Well, I think it's a deal, right? It's a deal to figure out how to move a lot faster on figuring out the areas of queasiness that people will have looking at nanotech, which my sense is that you can either promote this or have this being placed upon you, and it makes sense to promote it and to do it in a very honest way. I mean, I said I'm pleased that I was invited to be here, and pleased that Randy was invited to be here, and I wasn't told what to say, and that's a good start. I go to environmental conferences and they tell me what to say, so it's I said those are good signs, but then actually the way of doing it is by telling a compelling narrative about where America needs to go, and that narrative still hasn't been told, and that's the dream, the vision, the values that we can collectively rally around. And in the past, you sort of expected that to come from social movements or individuals. And as I said, I think that's not a responsibility of an ethicist or a story writer or a PR firm for the industry. That is the industry's work to say together, to say collectively. And, what better dream for us to have collectively? Thank you very much.